it Everest or Everest? Were Norgay and Hillary really the first two to summit? Do you call it Sagarmatha, Chomolungma, or Everest? I am your host, Pauline Reynolds-Nuttall of the All About Everest podcast since 2021. Join me weekly for all things Mount Everest, including updates, features, interviews, trivia, and so much more. It doesn't matter if you are an adventurer or an armchair mountaineer. There's something here for everyone as long as you love the mountain. Hey, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of the All About Everest podcast. Today's episode is going to be about all of the updates and things that you should know so far about the upcoming spring climbing season. There are so many updates, including another book, two deaths, a new sign that is taking the internet by storm, and everybody's talking about it, and some changes to policies on the Nepali side, amongst other things. This episode was initially supposed to be about the documentaries and movies about the 1996 Everest disaster, but I'm going to save that one for later. And before I get to that topic, I also want to do another episode about Mallory and Irvine, because it's been 100 years. Since they attempted to summit Mount Everest and they died. And I think it's really important to talk about. And you're going to hear other people talking about it as well in articles. I believe there's a documentary coming out. And so you'll see a lot about it, because 100 years is a big thing. That's one whole century. But I will definitely put a pin in that, as well as several recorded interviews that I have, because next week's episode, I want it to be about David Brashears, because he passed away and he really did add a lot to the Everest climbing culture, and also to kind of go over climbers to watch for the spring 2024 season. There's a little bit to get through this episode because I have been working on changing how I record and edit the episodes. I wanted to create better episodes, and also Spotify has changed the recording and editing process for podcasters. So I'm going through a little bit of a learning curve. That's the main reason why there hasn't been any episodes, because I've been trying to figure it out and I am not a techie person. I also know that I speak a little slow when I record, so I was hoping to find a way to speed it up. I talk slow when I record because during my day job, I really have to talk clearly and slowly because of the population that I work with. And I think the other thing too is I have so many languages jumbling in my head that talking slower kind of helps me make sense of all of that. I speak multiple languages and sometimes it's a bit of a jumble. And it's funny because in person, like when I'm not recording or I'm not at work, I speak really fast and then I have to slow down. So I just find it bizarre that I talk too slow during the podcast. And again, anytime that you have things that you want to bring up, if you like the changes made to this episode, please feel free to contact me, or you can even leave me a message on Spotify as well, if that's where you listen. And you can find me all over social media at Mama Bear Outdoors or the All About Everest podcast. I'm also trying to find a process for the old episodes to revamp them and edit them a little bit better as well. But that's also time consuming. And so I think I found a way to do it. And I believe I've found someone that can help me edit all of the episodes. So hopefully that will happen. Before I get to the rest of the episode, a huge shout out to my mom as usual. The podcast is really the only way I can connect with her because she has dementia, and also she lives on the other side of the world. She rarely recognizes it's me when I do talk to her on the phone, but she is a huge listener of the podcast and she listens every single week. So this is my way to connect with her. I have also added a store. I have an All About Everest store. You can find the link in the show description. And also, I am opening up another store that will be international, where you can get All About Everest merch, but also other mountaineering shirts and things like that. I have these really cool hoodies that we'll be posting to that. And so that should be by the end of April. And you can find the link to that as well in the show notes. I love everyone's messages and emails and comments. And there's one I wanted to read to you guys today. Anna sent me an email and she said, "Hello, I recently found your podcast and I love it. I'm new to the Everest world, but have just read two books you mentioned in the pod. When the season starts, it would be great if you know of blogs, podcasts, vlogs that will be climbing the mountain to update regularly. Again, thanks for an incredibly good podcast. Kind regards, Anna." And that will also be in next week's episode as well. Everyone to follow, including certain expeditions for the spring season. Alex also is pretty good about sending me updates, and she's the one who let me know that David Brashears had died. Gabby will be listening to us during her mountaineering adventures this year and at base camp. Let's hope she got what she wanted, and we'll be talking about that. I interviewed Gabby 2 years ago. Such a sweetheart. And absolute amazing person, doctor. Just absolutely fantastic. And if you are following along for the 52-week book challenge, it's 52 weeks, 52 mountaineering books. This week's mountaineering book is Lou Whitaker, The Memoirs of a Mountain Guide. And I will also include a link to that in the show notes where you can find on my website, mamabearoutdoors.com. That link to the show notes will also be in the description. And it will include all of the books and gear that I mentioned in this episode. All right, so let's get on to the rest of today's episode. As an outdoorsy person, I am always looking to up my outdoor game. I have two favorite products that I've discovered in the last couple of years, and they are kind of my go-to. The first one is the Nomadic Outdoor Subscription Box. It starts at $29.99, and they have monthly and quarterly plans. I have discovered cool outdoor brands by getting this box and brands that I would never have purchased on my own, including introductions to gear that I didn't even know existed. It's a great way to get new affordable gear and discover new brands as well. Check out thenomadic.com. That's thenomadic with a K.com. My other favorite product is through mymedic.com. I used to have a hard time finding the perfect first aid kit for home, the great outdoors, the car, and my short-term rental. But with MyMedic, I have found the perfect first aid kit for each of my needs and endeavors. My favorite go-to is the MyMedic Hiker Medic Kit that we use for camping, backpacking, hiking, and off-roading. You can also restock the stuff that you've used through MyMedic as well. Both links are affiliate links, and I may earn a small commission from them if you click on the links that are included in the show description. So to start with the updates for today's podcast episode, I wanted to bring up, first and foremost, the three newest Everest books. I've kind of mentioned two out of three, but I really wanted to go into a little bit more detail. The first one I have talked about since I interviewed Guy Kotcher last year, the owner of Adventure Consultants. Everest Mountain Guide, The Remarkable Story of a Kiwi Mountaineer, by Guy Kotcher. It's not just about Mount Everest. It's about Guy's whole mountaineering journey from being a weekend dirtbag kid to becoming one of the most well-known and accomplished mountaineers. He's also very well-respected in the mountaineering community, and he's definitely been through a lot. The book is only available in New Zealand. My sister Faye, who is currently living in China, went to New Zealand around Christmas. I told her the day before she left, because silly me, I forget things, if she was near a bookstore to look for it. She said it was at the first bookstore that she looked at, right up front, huge display. She said that it seemed like they were so proud of him and his accomplishments regarding mountaineering in general, kind of like he was a renowned national treasure. That's how she kind of presented it to me. She bought the book for me and took it home to China. And then she schlepped it with her onto Guam and then Tinian, which is in the South Pacific, tracked down a U.S. post office and sent it to me. The shipping was almost $10. The package was torn and battered, but she was thoughtful enough to put it in a Ziploc and it's in perfect condition. This book is now in my top 10 mountaineering books and top 5 for Everest. You can find this book, again, currently only in New Zealand. I did see one copy on eBay here in the US. The second book I wanted to bring up, I don't think I've mentioned this one before, is Fallen, George Mallory and the Tragic 1924 Everest Expedition. If you're familiar with books about mountaineering and Mount Everest, then you are likely familiar with Mick Conifry. He has written many books, including Everest 1922 and Everest 1953, amongst his many books about mountaineering in general. I have not read this book yet, though I do have a request in for a pre-copy, but I did go ahead and pre-order it. It's going to be released on May 1st, and you can find it on Amazon US, Amazon UK, Amazon Canada, and Amazon Australia. So I believe you can probably get it anywhere in the world and order it wherever you get your books. I'm really excited to read it. I respect Mick as an author, and because this is 100 years since Irvine and Mallory died on Mount Everest, I figured there would be books and documentaries and things like that coming out. He does have different perspectives in his books, but he's a very good writer, and I am looking forward to that book. Book number 3, I have brought it up already, and I only have 2 chapters left. Everest Inc., The Renegades and Rogues Who Built an Industry at the Top of the World, by Will Cockrell. It will be released on April 16th. You can find it wherever you purchase your books. It is available internationally. You can find it on Amazon US, Amazon UK, Amazon Canada, Amazon Australia, and anywhere that you get your books. This book is probably in my top 3 when it comes to Mount Everest. I got a little sidetracked, so I didn't finish it up yet. I'm like 95% there, but you guys, I really loved this book. It's extremely well written, has some humor, and there is not another Everest book like it. Most Everest books are about particular people or events or seasons. This is a journey of multiple characters and multiple expeditions woven together to tell the story of Mount Everest from a completely different point of view and the changes in the culture regarding this mountain. It really is a story of stories, and weaving all of it together and going from all of these changes to where we're at today. I know a lot of people who maybe don't understand are against people climbing Mount Everest. One of the interviews that I recently did with someone from the Sherpa community, he said that without the expeditions on Mount Everest, without the need of him having to go through the Khumbu Icefall, because he's done that job before, he wouldn't have the opportunities that he has. So we have to remember that the commercialization of Mount Everest, it isn't just for the people climbing and for those opportunities. It is an opportunity for the community around Mount Everest to have opportunities that would not otherwise be available to them. All of that money that has been injected into that local economy, it has built hospitals, schools, it has opened up education and other opportunities to people who live there that wouldn't otherwise have them. So as much as it's sad that this wonderful place has become a moneymaker, the people who live there, they don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. So I just want to keep that in mind. The people in this book, they're all unique humans with such diverse backgrounds, and yet they had this common thread of climbing Mount Everest. And so I really encourage you guys to pre-order this book or check it out when it becomes released next month. I have 2 deaths that I need to talk about. David Brashears has passed away on March 14th at the age of 68. He is most well known in the Everest community as the person who guided Richard Bass to the summit of Everest and as the IMAX movie producer and director. He was a mountaineer, adventurer, and a documentary maker, and because of him, the world was really able to experience Mount Everest in 1998 when the IMAX film came out. Until then, it was shrouded in mystery, and he opened up so many people's eyes to what happens up there and what it's like and the wonderment of Chomolungma and Sagarmatha. His documentary inspired so many to get into climbing and mountaineering. And I can guarantee you every single person that has set foot on Mount Everest since 1998 has watched that film. So next week's episode is going to be about David Brashears. Another death is Lou Whitaker. He is the twin brother of James Jim Whitaker, and he passed away on March 24th at the age of 95. His brother Jim was the first American to summit Mount Everest, and Lou actually was offered that opportunity, but he didn't take it. And he led the first American ascent from the North Col in 1984. He was the founder of RMI Expeditions and had many great mountaineering achievements of his own, including he participated in a rescue, I believe it was on Mount Rainier in the 40s. You can learn more about his history as a mountaineer in his memoir, Lou Whitaker, The Memoir of a Mountain Guide, and also in his brother's book, A Life on the Edge, Memoirs of Everest and Beyond. Not necessarily an update, but you guys know that I like interesting tidbits of information. And Caroline Gleick, she summited Mount Everest with her husband in 2019, and she is running for the U.S. Senate in the state of Utah. I don't believe that they've ever had a female senator, and she's running on the Democratic side, which Utah is more of a Republican state. But her platform is, because I am a ski mountaineer, because I have accomplished all of these things, because I am a woman, this is what Utah needs now in order to move forward. I have skills that nobody else does because I've done hard things, like summiting Mount Everest, because of my mountaineering, because of my skiing. So good luck, Caroline, and we'll be keeping track to see if you win. For those of you who are going to Everest and EBC this year from the Nepali side, you're going to encounter a new-ish landmark. The very recognizable rock with the EBC elevation on it, with all of the graffiti, is now hidden behind a sign. And people are talking about it a lot. So a couple years back, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, the rock tipped over. And it's a national landmark. Everybody knows about this rock. Anyone who goes to EBC, they take their picture in front of this rock. It's on the Nepali side. And it somehow tipped over. It could be because of an earthquake. Some said because the glacier moved. Regardless, it had tipped over so that you couldn't really see the front of it as much anymore. And last week, all of a sudden, there was a sign in front of it, this huge wooden sign with the faces of Tenzing Norgay and Sir Edmund Hillary with the elevation on it. There are some people who are like, great, now we don't have to see this rock anymore covered with graffiti, which is such an eyesore. And then other people were extremely upset because they're like, wait, this is a landmark. And not even that, this sign, it's blocking the view and all of the mountains behind it. So you can't get that in the background. Several people have suggested, instead of putting it right in front of the Everest rock, to maybe move it to the side instead. So we'll see if that happens. There's no in between. Either people hate the sign or they love the sign. So we'll see what happens. The ice doctors have headed out to Mount Everest, and they left on March 5th. These are the crew that every year prepare the way through the Khumbu Icefall and are often part of the rope fixing team. This is probably the most dangerous job in the world. And yet these brave men every year do this job so that it's easier to circumvent the icefall and give the climbers the opportunity to reach Mount Everest. I believe they're already through the icefall and they are continuing their way up the rest of the mountain. These are also the people who are part of the rope fixing team, and so they fix the ropes. The Khumbu Icefall is so dangerous, and the majority of the deaths in the icefall are the Sherpa community, which consists of 1/3 of all of the overall deaths on Mount Everest. And in 2014, when the Serac fell in the Khumbu Icefall, 18 high altitude porters from the Sherpa community they died. They were killed by this Siroc that fell. So just remember, anyone who summits Mount Everest, they owe a from the Nepali side at least, they owe a huge thank you to the ice doctors. And this group of men, they're hired by the Sagarmatha Pollution Control Committee, and they do this job every year. It's not usually the same ones, but a lot of them are usually the same people again and again. Expedition permits are now available, and they started to be issued on the 25th for the Nepali side. This year is expected to be crowded, but with climbers being allowed on both sides, hopefully it will even out. And even though every year they issue more and more and more permits, the overcrowding really comes down to the summit window. If that weather window is long, then there really isn't a lot of crowding and everyone can kind of plan their expedition accordingly. But in 2019, when you had 3 days, that was the only weather window that they had. And it's either, well, you either waste your money and you don't go, or you go and the whole overcrowding, it really depends on the weather. And last year was a really bad year on Mount Everest because 18 people died. They still haven't found everybody. Several of them are missing, presumed dead. It was a bit of a debacle with the climbers being abandoned by their teams. And I have said it before and I will say it again. The main cause of deaths on Mount Everest is irresponsible guides and the expedition companies. If you have a good person guiding you and an ethical and responsible guide with you, there is no reason you should die. Truly, most of the deaths on Mount Everest can be prevented. Of course, there are things that happen, obviously, but there's a lot of human error stuff that if better decisions had been made, then maybe those people didn't need to die. That, to me, the main reason people die on Mount Everest is poor decision making made by the expedition companies that they choose to go through. We'll be seeing climbers heading out in the next couple of weeks. Usually they head out between the first week of April to the second or third week, and they'll be starting their acclimatization routines. Part of that for a lot of people is that whole trek to EBC, and then they do rotations through the Khumbu Icefall. Some of them will climb other weeks as well, or other peaks as well, like Island Peak and things like that, just to get that adjustment to the altitude. There will be expeditions on both sides this year, both from Nepal and Tibet. Tibet has been closed since 2020 to foreign climbers. Tibet has often been considered safer because it is less crowded and there is no icefall. One of the biggest reasons why it is less crowded is because the regulations on the Tibetan side are much stricter, and they're also stricter with their visa policy. Some companies will only climb from Tibet, like Alpenglow Expeditions, whereas some will do both, like Furttenbach. There have been some huge policy changes this year on the Nepali side, and this has caused a huge uproar because this document that came out, it initially came out on February 8th from the Khumbu Pasang Lamu Rule Municipality. And they oversee all of the policies, procedures, and rules of Nepal's EBC. This document came out with many new changes regarding those policies and procedures. And it was right after the Sagarmatha Pollution Control Committee, that's a mouthful, released a new regulation on the use of wag bags. It's been a well-known issue on Mount Everest that human waste is a huge problem and that something needed to be done. Alan Arnett has mentioned it many times, and so have other people in the mountaineering community. Everybody knows that it's a huge issue because human waste does not decompose at those altitudes. Once it's there, it's stuck there. This year, they are requiring anyone climbing to use a wag bag and dispose of their human waste appropriately, including someone who will be checking these bags when climbers come down. I would not want to have that inspection job. Can you imagine having to check bags of poop? If you're not sure what a wag bag is, it's a special bag that has chemicals in it for storing waste, and you can do your business in it and properly dispose of it. It's becoming a popular tool and an even considered an essential in gear used by the outdoor community. Some of the WAG bags even come like with a little kit that includes toilet paper and sanitary wipes. So this document that initially came out on February 8th, it wasn't well written and it contradicted itself. And then a revision was released on February 28th, and then another revision was released on March 8th. It's even more confusing because now there are three documents floating around, and it does not appear that any of the Western operators were contacted regarding the updates to these policies, and they had to go hunt for this information online. The goal of these changes appears to make the mountains safer, reduce crowding, and minimize human impact. Last year was not a good year. Too many people died, and the trash and all of that, it's just accumulating faster than they can bring it down. And so they decided to do something about it. I don't know if they had a well-thought plan or anything like that. They just did half a plan. But they came out with all of these new rules and guidelines. And the biggest problem with these rules is A, they're not clear. B, some of them don't really make a lot of sense. And the other one is, how are they going to be regulated? You know, who's going to stand there and make sure that all of these policies and procedures are followed? And is there going to be a fine? Are there any consequences for not following these guidelines and regulations? If they put up a tent that's too big, are they going to be made to take it down or fined? So I'm not really sure. But this seems to be a reoccurring theme every year. Some new idea is thrown out there. It's made into a policy, and then it just kind of falls apart once the spring season begins. GPS tracking. They are requiring that each climber must have a GPS tracking device that must be sewn into their jacket. And once they are back down to EBC, they must return the device. They're required to rent it. It's unclear what this actual device is, and that's part of the problem. Though Ellen Arnett thinks it could be a Reco chip that works with radar. So it's not really a GPS device because it can't really track you on the mountain. It's helping someone find you. It's this little tag, if you will, that you can put into your boot, your clothing, and then they can find it with radar. It's not like it's something where if I follow you on a map using equipment, I know exactly where you're at. Ellen Arnett had a really good article about all of the different tracking devices that you can use, anywhere from radios to actual GPS tracking systems, and why he thought it was going to be a Reco chip. And so I would highly suggest you read that article. Party size. They're saying the expeditions, the groups should only be 15 people at a time. I already think that they do that. I think they split up these big expeditions that have tens of climbers into smaller groups. It would make more sense that they already do it because then it's easier to track everybody. And logistically, it just makes more sense. So I'm really not sure why they put that in there because I think it's already being done. Helicopters. Initially, it appeared that helicopters would be banned from Mount Everest completely. There are several expedition companies that have used helicopters to ferry equipment to EBC and also up into the higher camps. This helps reduce the traffic of porters in the icefall, which is the most dangerous part of the mountain. It makes it quicker and more efficient to get gear out there. But now it appears the policy has changed and some exceptions will be made with a special committee supervising this. It's so vague and it's really unclear who this committee is and what their guidelines are going to be. It was also emphasized that operators should utilize yaks and porters first and foremost when ferrying and bringing in gear, which makes sense because that is how the people in that community earn their money and it's their livelihood. Waste. Everyone is required to bring down 8 kilograms, which is about 20 pounds, of waste. I already thought that they had something like that, but maybe I'm wrong. I thought they already had to bring that down. I don't think it was regulated, is my understanding. And I thought I had saw somewhere that each company is required to provide a list of equipment they will take above base camp and that this list will be checked when they are done to ensure that they have brought everything down. But when I went back to look, I couldn't find it. So maybe I imagined it, or it may be one of those policies that was done away with. I'm not really sure. Visitors. They were trying to ban visitors from EBC and any of the other camps, kind of to reduce the amount of people, which in turn would reduce the amount of human traffic at base camp. But apparently they changed their mind. Tent size. This one was really not clear, and it didn't necessarily make sense. So they tried to eliminate those big dome tents that they have. There's a big, I guess what they wanted to do was eliminate some of the luxuries that are at EBC because they're not needed. They're not necessary. Spas are not needed. These huge, ginormous food tents aren't really needed. And it is to reduce the human impact at EBC. But initially they said that the tents could only be 10 feet by 10 feet. And maybe I'm understanding this wrong, but I don't think I am. 10 feet by 10 feet per person. And now they've switched it up to it's 60 square feet for dining tents and 80 square feet for sleeping tents. So, and they may completely do away with it as well. Here's the thing. They didn't reduce or limit the amount of tents a company can have, only the size. So what's going to stop people from using one, instead of using one big tent, 10 little tents? I think that kind of defeats the purpose, and that's going to be a problem. So we'll see how that goes. Honestly, I think these policies are a good start, but shouldn't be implemented yet. They really should get a group of expedition leaders from who are Westerners and locals, and really sit down and discuss everything. Maybe use some type of survey that needs to be completed at the end. Have all of the expedition companies, every single person that was out there this year, fill out some type of survey, and then really use those answers and those numbers to put together a well-formulated plan, which would include what the policies are, how they're going to be implemented, who's going to regulate them, and obviously the repercussions if they don't. Because that's the biggest problem with these policies is there's no consequences. There's no fines. There's no nothing. It's either do it and that's it. There's no consequence if you don't abide. You're not going to lose your licenses or your privileges if you don't follow through. Is essentially what I'm saying. All right, that is it for today's episode. Next week's episode is going to be about David Brashears. I'm also going to come up with a list of people that you should follow and some of the climbers that are interesting. So until next time, climb your own climb, and I will see you next week. Thank you for listening to today's episode of the All About Everest podcast. Please support this podcast by following, rating, commenting, and sharing. I appreciate your feedback, and you can find me on social media at Mama Bear Outdoors or at All About Everest podcast. Thank you for following and listening since 2022.